The Gerontological Society of America, Meaningful Lives as We Age.
Welcome to this GSA Momentum Discussion podcast episode titled Addressing Brain Health in the American Indian and Alaskan Native Communities. Momentum discussions highlight topics experiencing great momentum in the field of gerontology. We're grateful to Genentech, Lilly, Eisai, and Otsuka for their support of the GSA Care Toolkit for primary care teams and today's podcast. My name is Jen Pettis, and I'm the Director of Strategic Alliances at the Gerontological Society of America, and I'm pleased to serve as the host for today's Momentum discussion. I'm so happy to be joined by Michael Splain, a principal with Splain Consulting and managing partner with Recruitment Partners, LLC. Mike is a contributor to the CDC's Healthy Brain Initiative, along with a wide variety of communities of interest, including GSA and the Healthy Brain Initiative's Roadmap for Indian Country. Mike also consults with the International Indigenous Aging Association and the Great Lakes Intertribal Council. Mike is not a tribal citizen, but is a leader in addressing brain health and dementia in the American Indian and Alaska Native communities, as well as a great friend to GSA. Mike, I'm so glad you could join me.
And a lifelong member of GSA, so far.
Well, it's great to have you here, Mike. Thanks so much.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Mike, the American Indian and Alaska Native people have long experienced lower health status when compared with other Americans. How about brain health in this population? What disparities exist and what challenges do we need to overcome to promote brain health in this population?
You know, even with the questions in advance, this is a tough one because the diversity between and among tribes and about how our American Indian citizens live and where they live feel like they're infinite permutations. What do I mean by that? 60% of people who identify as American Indian live in urban areas. So if the picture that immediately comes to mind when we say American Indians and Alaska Natives is reservation-dwelling Indians, that's part of those who identify as American Indian. And so the diversity is a real challenge. Having said that, in many health studies, race is not necessarily a category. For example, when we look at Medicare data, which for the older population is really important, and those with disabilities, Medicare doesn't track race. The generalizing of some of these issues becomes very, very hard. In general, yes, American Indians and Alaska Natives do have lower health status when compared to other Americans, including their brain health. Three perspectives on that. First, we are now beginning to understand and really deploy resources toward risk reduction of dementia in late life. And to the extent that risk factors like diabetes and untreated hypertension are high in American Indian communities, there's a risk story to be told about the greater risk, but also the greater opportunity for doing something about that risk in American Indian and Alaska Native community. A second comment about brain health in the population is that trauma, historic, current, and actual trauma to individuals in terms of the rates of road accidents, of all things, and lack of helmet use adds injury to insult to the already existing higher risk factor for poor brain health in late life. I think a third disparity that I would mention is that, particularly for reservation-dwelling American Indians who rely on the Indian Health Service and its components to provide their basic health care, all experts agree that the Indian Health Service has about 10% of what it needs to do its job. And in that environment, brain health may be seen as a luxury and assumptions made that, well, American Indians have shorter lifespans, therefore issues of chronic disease in old age, like Alzheimer's and related dementia, aren't going to be as prevalent, which is turning out to not be true. The American Indian and Alaska Native community, I'll throw in the Native Hawaiians, is aging at a rapid clip. And so concern and awareness about Alzheimer's disease and related dementias is justifiably, whether it's risk or it's actual people with dementia coming to light, it's actually becoming a brain health issue in Indian country.
So, Mike, when I ask you this next question, I'm actually wishing that we were on camera so people could see what you usually do when I ask this question, which is, what are the underlying principles to your work with the American Indian and Alaskan Native communities around a variety of issues, including brain health, and how could these be applied to work around brain health with other diverse and underserved populations?
Yeah, we may be doing color radio, but you can't quite see what I'm about to do. But a wonderful Ojibwe man named Steve Chapman, who was one of my cultural guide when I started working on the roadmap for Indian Country 5 years ago, said that essentially by symbol, he said, I need to listen and see much, much more than I talk. And I think that's the underlying principle. If you're not a tribal citizen, you shouldn't pretend that you understand that. That doesn't mean you can not be understanding, that you cannot be a sympathetic and good listener. But, you know, many people fail when they work interculturally. Many people fail because they're so full of their message about what they want to talk about, they don't leave any room for listening and learning. So I think it's, people call that cultural humility. I just call it respect. And really, that's the first fundamental principle. Listen more than you talk. And health people, I'll just say, health people as a rule, whether it's a disease group or it's a health promotion of some sort, they're on a mission to tell you something. So, you know, you have to take a minute and take a breath and listen. I will also say, boy, white hair works. I get, nowhere in America do I get respect for my white hair. Well earned, by the way, 3 daughters. My white hair, except when I'm with Indian people. It's really great. I think 2 other principles. It's hard sometimes to understand that although American Indians and Alaska Natives are American citizens, they're also tribal citizens. And this word sovereignty comes into play. But when we work interculturally with American Indians, we have to really understand in a deep way that they are sovereign nations. They have their own laws, traditions, police forces. You can get a ticket from a Chickasaw cop on the reservation. So I think sovereignty, really, really important. And when it comes to data and ownership of things like genetic information, there's been some real sins against tribes in terms of that sovereignty not being respected, including in the Alzheimer's and dementia space in which I work. I remember when I was starting to go find case studies for the roadmap for Indian Country, 4 years ago, I went to some of the Southwestern tribes and I said, well, I'm here to talk. I'd like to listen and learn what your experience is with Alzheimer's and dementia. And I got stoned. Oh, we know about that. And I got the crossed arms. And that was it. That was the end of the conversation until I found out later that, in fact, researchers had been in there to do their thing and, you know, hit and run and really disrespect sovereignty. The more interesting thing, the flip side of sovereignty and respect and listening is we have these wonderful opportunities to co-design solutions. It's not, I've never been anywhere where my knowledge about dementia and related caregiving, never been anywhere with American Indian communities where my knowledge is not respected. But that doesn't mean people want to be told what to do or the solutions that come from the dominant culture. They want to discover their own cultures. So you have these wonderful opportunities, whether it's basic research, it's understanding and supporting caregivers, promoting brain health. We have these wonderful opportunities to bring what we know as gerontologists or as aging specialists to the community, but work with it in such a way that there is respectful opportunity for co-design. I think that's been the most, of all the things, all the adventures in the last 3 or 4 years with Indian Country, for me, it's these opportunities to build together, to collaborate, in the literal words of the Latin, to work together. That's exciting.
That's terrific, Mike. I love how you looked at, you mentioned opportunity when you mentioned the great risk that folks face, that creates opportunity. And then I heard you just now how you can use the sovereignty as another opportunity to allow folks to drive their own solution. It's really so rich to hear you in this discussion.
Well, I've got a silly project right now. I'll just take one second here. We have a silly project right now about culturally appropriate dementia food plating. You know, we know that people with dementia have trouble with white on white. There's a, you know, whole body of knowledge about how to present food to people with moderate to severe dementia. Now, how do we do that? How do we do that in keeping with a culture? And it's just been really fun to go out with open hands and say, teach me, what can we do together? Who's really smart about this? It's just a different way of doing the work that's just so much more rich than coming in like the smart guy that knows everything.
Wonderful. Must be so rewarding. I'd like to switch gears now and talk a bit about the Healthy Brain Initiative's roadmap for Indian Country. Mike, can you share a bit about an overview of the roadmap, really the broad approach and its intended audience?
So in the words of my great friends from Virginia, public health is the health of all y'all. And so with that as stated, the roadmap for Indian Country is a document to provide guidance and action step suggestions to Indian tribal and urban Indian health center leaders and tribal leaders more generally about public health approaches to approach dementia and related caregiving. So it's not everything. It's not social service approaches. It's public health approaches. Having said that, our experience with implementing the roadmap in the last 4 years is that public health actions are, because the structures are different, because the resources are different, public health actions are just as likely to be taken by somebody who is technically not a public health actor as somebody that, for example, runs Aging Direct Services. So it's just important to realize that although the emphasis is activities that can lift up the health of everyone, a lot of the actors, a lot of the folks that have picked up the roadmap and run with it are folks that are not technically public health folks. Having said that, public health is everywhere, often operates in the background. If you like clean water and clean air, you like public health, you just didn't know it. You know, so I think there's that to think about. So the Healthy Brain Initiative roadmap, why did we write a roadmap for Indian Country? The Healthy Brain Initiative is a project that has been funded by Congress for over almost 20 years now, and it's a collaborative agreement between the Alzheimer's Association and the CDC. It has produced roadmaps giving direction to this, to the public health field, for state and local public health officials. And we went out to Indian Country with that roadmap for state and local public health. I went out, and it just bounced off. It just didn't connect. And we realized between that and the growing risk factors, the growing understanding, some real early adopters of doing stuff about dementia in Indian Country, such as Jane Neal Henderson from Minnesota, the Banner Health System in Arizona, Dr. Blythe Winchester, and Bruce Fink from the Indian Health Service. All of them said, you got to do something that's unique for Indian Country. And so we did. I mean, that's we stop beating our head against the wall, bringing the state and local approach out to very different traditions and structures. So the broad approach is public health. Its intended audience are ITU services, as they're called, Indian Health Service, tribal and urban Indian health center leadership, and tribal leadership more generally.
And I understand there's 8 public health strategies outlined. Can you share a bit about them?
Yeah, they're divided into categories. The 8 actions are divided into categories. I'll just take one of the categories is strengthening the workforce. And one action item that will sound very noble and doable, educate healthcare and aging service professionals in Indian Country about the signs and symptoms of dementia and about caregiving for persons with dementia. That would lift up the health. Yeah, that public health approach to education and educating that workforce about the signs and symptoms of dementia seems very doable, very practical. And as the prevalence is on the rise and as awareness that dementia is not normal aging, it's almost as if every community has to go through this phase of thinking about dementia and related caregiving, that they get to understand it in a felt way and act on the fact that dementia is not normal aging, that it is not necessary that all of us will lose our faculties before we pass on or walk on. And this community is learning that lesson too. So I think that's an example of a public health action, because it affects all of us, that can be taken, that comes from the roadmap. And it can be done at many levels. That's the other thing I love about a public health approach. It can be done locally, could be done on or off a reservation. It could be done nationally. We work with the International Indigenous Aging Association. They too have funding from the Centers for Disease Control, and they have created a whole body of culturally appropriate dementia tools that are now available to the whole community. Didn't exist 4 years ago.
You mentioned a few organizations and people that have really made some great work happen. Can you share a couple of success stories with Indigenous communities looking at dementia issues?
In Wisconsin, the state funds, through their aging network, a number of dementia care specialists. These are folks that work at the community level, do dementia awareness, to mobilize concern and bring people together around what can be done locally about dementia to help people with dementia and their family caregivers live better lives. I guess 3 years ago, the state added to its body of dementia care specialists a position for every tribe. So now we have tribal dementia care specialists. They work side by side with their non-tribal folks. They get the same background and education and support and work statewide, but they work in their own way within their tribes or in their multi-tribal organizations. That's an example of, I think that's a living example of a very high level of commitment to do the right thing, but to do it in a culturally appropriate way. Because in some of those tribal organizations, they're not called a dementia care specialist because it doesn't click. It doesn't click. So my friends at GLITSE, Great Lakes Intertribal Center, have adapted the job description so that it's more meaningful for the upper Great Lakes tribes. I mean, just one great example of action that's been taken. Another one is our friends in Nevada, the Pyramid Lake Paiute. Go to Reno and go 80 miles inland to the Great Basin. The Pyramid Lake Paiute 5 years ago found out about dementia-friendly communities, how they can get trained in using those awareness tools on their reservation. And they're wonderful implementers of all the principles, but also all the activities in dementia-friendly communities. And they're, by the way, and the fishing in Pyramid Lake is outstanding. Oh, I shouldn't tell anybody because then you're going to want to go there. Sorry about that, Pyramid Lake. So those are a couple of examples. Seriously, though, using the tools of Dementia Friendly America as a way to raise awareness. Those are some examples. I'd be a fool if I didn't also mention that because of its leadership role in the Healthy Brain Initiative and its leadership role in trying to bring diversity, equity, and inclusion to the world of dementia and related caregiving, I'd be a fool if I didn't mention the Alzheimer's Association and through its chapter network, developing partnerships, another big public health word, developing partnerships to work with at the tribal level or work within the urban Indian health centers to provide information, referral, first level support for people dealing with Alzheimer's or thinking they're dealing with Alzheimer's disease. And again, it tracks where tribes are. There's a lot more activity in Oklahoma than there is in Maryland, but that's because there are 39 tribes in Oklahoma. And we have two tribes that have headquarters here in Maryland.
You've told us a lot of things that folks have learned, but I suspect that there are lots more questions to be answered. What are some of those open research questions that need to be answered for the work to be more successful?
I think all of us, and by the way, we're in the process right now and have a wonderful leadership committee, and there'll be a roadmap for Indian Country 2 coming out at the end of this calendar year. It's 2024, so sometime and maybe in time for GSA in November, who knows? At any rate, that's something to hope for, but there's work underway on a new roadmap, which is why these ideas about open research questions as well as success stories is so important. One thing that troubles us all is to understand the pathway, support, care, identification of dementia, support and care for family caregivers for those American Indians and Alaskan Natives who live in urban areas. It's 60%, and we just don't know a lot. Now, our friends at the University of North Dakota have recently published something called the Nuenis study, which was based on surveys of about 1,500 urban dwelling American Indian elders. So that's a darn good start. That's a team that, and that information is available, very easily available. That generates new questions. Are people more at risk? How or whether they get health care? Are urban Indian health centers deploying tools like the Medicare annual wellness visit or the care kit as part of their routine of care that they're delivering older adults? Are urban Indian health centers taking advantage of the billing tools in Medicare to both promote brain health, identify dementia, and support people with things like care planning? So those are some of the mysteries. I think those are some of the research questions. There's also, and there's a wonderful researcher that's onto this, there's a lot of commuting. My friend Turner Goines, who I know is a GSA member from down in North Carolina, Turner coined the term commuting caregivers because there are people that live off reservation and yet go back for caregiving duties. And I've met them in Las Vegas. I can say this because I'm not saying their name, so I'm not breaking confidentiality. There's four young adults that I've met who own a crappy car and live in a terrible apartment in Las Vegas four nights a week because that's where the work is. And on Friday night, they all pile into the crappy car. They pool their money. They go back to the reservation to take care of the grannies and grampies. It's a commuting caregiving. I'd like to understand that more. People, not just, that's taking your citizenship really to another level, but it's also family. And, you know, that's the great story about Alzheimer's is all over the world, the care system for people with Alzheimer's and dementia, first and foremost, and in many places, is only families. So it's just a different expression of that same dynamic that I think is an open research question.
Very interesting, the phrase commuting caregiving. I know.
Yeah, Dr. Turner did a good job with that.
Yeah, I had not heard that term, but that it makes a lot of sense. Well, I could go on and on with our discussion today. I have enjoyed this discussion so much, Mike. I've learned so much, as I always do when I listen to you. I'm just going to mention a couple of things that really stuck out with me. You started talking about the diversity of where and how American Indian and Alaskan Native people live and about the overall risks of the individual's health and why there is greater risk, there also is greater opportunity. I always love to hear you talk about listen more than you talk and really the idea of that listening and the respect and the coming up with solutions together so resonated with me. What are some key points you want to leave listeners with that I didn't mention?
There are flocks of resources here. I mentioned the care kit. It's something that I know GSA is super proud of, and it works if people apply it. So there are resources here. International Indigenous Aging Association, the Alzheimer's Association. There's no lack of stuff, if you will, and there'll be more. There will be more as we take this public health approach. For the GSA research audience, think long and hard about how you include or could include people in an advisory or in a driver's seat basis about your research. If you're curious about whether it's biological sciences or the social sciences, there's more room for, and I think you will accelerate the pace and the quality of research, not to mention recruitment, if you actually get your sleeves rolled up and sit there and listen when people say, that's an impossible protocol. Can we work on that together to make it more possible? So I think there's some wonderful science opportunities here. But again, it begins with that respect and listening. And don't assume, the last thing I would say is, don't assume that American Indians and Alaska Natives don't know about these issues, but do know that they have their own way of knowing and their own way of talking about it. And it's important to know that and respect that there is an Indian way of knowing that may be far beyond just what we can physically count and understand empirically. That's what culture is. That's what culture is. And I got to end with a story there. I'm Irish Catholic culture. And when people say, are you tribal? I say, no, but I'm Irish Catholic, and that's close. And believe me, it can be. But the next part of the story is, do you know about the Irish Catholics and the American Indians? And some people don't, and some people do. It turns out, this gets to the Indian way of knowing. In 1847, at the end of the Trail of Tears, which is when our American government forcefully took all the people who were living peacefully in Georgia to Oklahoma and relocated the American Indians from the east to the west, to the Midwest, was also the year, first year of the Irish potato famine, which ultimately led to over 1 million people dying or immigrating out of a population of 7.5 million on that little island. Choctaw heard about the famine. We don't know how, but they raised money at the end of the Trail of Tears. They raised $25,000 and they sent it to Ireland so that the Irish could buy food to keep from starving. That money went to the village, a village on the Skibbereen Peninsula, which is one peninsula away from where my people, the Spillanes, are from in County Cork, Ireland. And there is a magnificent monument in Middleton, County Cork, Ireland, to the Choctaw knowing and somehow responding compassionately, even though they were flat on their backs themselves, responding compassionately to the people who were so troubled and starving in Ireland. It's just part of the interconnectedness of mind, body, and spirit and solidarity that we all ought to treasure and appreciate. But you could look it up. Middleton, County Cork, Ireland. It's a beautiful monument, stainless steel, and it's 20 miles as the crow flies from where my grandfather is from.
The story is a great way to end, Mike. Thank you so much for your time with me today. I have enjoyed this discussion a great deal, and I am sure that those who listen to it will enjoy it and find it extremely informative. Thank you for all your contributions to GSA's work, Mike. I really appreciate it.
The Gerontological Society of America was founded in 1945 to cultivate excellence in interdisciplinary aging research and education to advance innovations in practice and policy. For more information about GSA, visit geron.org, G-E-R-O-N.org.